I'm Dana Lloyd. Welcome to Soul Sister Conversations, the podcast, where you will be inspired and empowered to connect more deeply with your authentic self as we explore topics of personal development, leadership, and spirituality. Your journey to your most authentic self starts right now. Carrie Gaskin is a counselor and therapist who joins me to talk about being our favorite self. We use this theme as we explore managing overwhelm, burnout, and exhaustion. In particular, we talk about invisible labor, the stuff we do every day that doesn't get acknowledged, like chores and family organization. Carrie shares so much wisdom in this warm conversation, including strategies to recover from overwhelm. Have you always wanted your own personal coach? Well, now you can have one. Sign up for my weekly newsletter called Coach in Your Inbox, where I give you an inspirational message along with a coaching question for the week. Plus, you'll always be up to date with who is on the podcast and get my latest book recommendation. I value my relationships and community with others. So let's start a relationship. Go to danalloydleadership.com to sign up. Carrie Gaskin, welcome to Soul Sister Conversations.
Oh, Dana, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm delighted to meet you and connect with you in this way. I saw you speak at an award ceremony we attended like back in the spring, probably one of the first things I attended once all the restrictions were lifted. And of course, anywhere I go, I'm always shopping for good podcast guests. I'm like, oh, I'm going to write that person's name down. And yours are one of the names that I wrote down. And I remember one of the quotes that you shared, and it said, don't show up as your best self, show up as your favorite self. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. So if we jumped off there saying with that quote, what would you have to say about that?
I think there's a lot of time we put pressure on ourselves to perform, right? To meet the expectations of the external world. And so often that best self is really identified, defined by others, right? So if I say, you know, I'm going to be the best mother, well, there's a definition for that. If I'm going to be the best therapist, there's somebody else defining that. But if I show up as my favorite Carrie, right? The person who I'm most comfortable with, that person that I want to hang out with, then I can truly be real. And I'm a little bit loath to use the word authentic again, because it's become almost trite, but it's true. If we're showing up as our favorite selves, we really are engaged in being truly authentic. We're so real, right? If I show up as my favorite self, how can I not be engaged with the world around me?
Is this something that you see a lot in your practice, women coming to you because they're having a difficult time showing up as their favorite self or living up to other people's expectations? Is this a common thing? I mean, we hear it, but you're in the front line, you see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't matter what field people are working in. This is part of it, right? That sense that somehow I have to meet others' expectations, and I'm constantly striving to meet those expectations, to be validated by that external world. And it's such a difficult balance to be struck between, you know, performing well at your chosen career, your chosen vocation, you know, the thing that you're called to do, and balancing that with, and I need to be there for myself in a way that allows me to show up in my job, for my family, for my friends. And people come to me and they're like, you know, I just can't find that. I'm stuck, or I'm drowning, right? I'm so overwhelmed. I'm so overloaded. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. And a lot of the time I really ask the question, what are you aiming to achieve? What is it that you're striving so hard to do? What happens if you pause, take that breath and say, you know, who am I trying to please? Why am I trying to please them? And what happens if I just let go of some of those expectations?
So hard to do.
Oh, golly.
yeah, I know. If there was an easy magic pill for that, that would be great.
Right.
But you use the word, you know, balance. People are trying to balance expectations, who they're supposed to be, who they have to show up with. And that's a word I've been hearing a lot recently is this work-life balance. And I have never seen so much mental stress, exhaustion, and burnout as I've seen this year, either just through me knowing people or coaching people or even asked to speak on the topic. There's just a great need for it. And one of the things that you talk about or you you experience as women and this weight of invisible labor, you call it, or the mental emotional load. And I'm curious if you could do a little dive on that in terms of what is it to have, what are you referring to when we talk about invisible labor and that a mental emotional load?
So we have kind of the more visible load, right? This is our job. It's the checklist that, you know, we have a professional life that has clearly defined responsibilities, very specifically defined roles, right? Mm-hmm. Your job title has that list of tasks. Then we have that mental load, those day-to-day responsibilities, right? That go way beyond the expectations of our paid work. It's the, mm-hmm. you know, did I walk the dog? Who did the laundry get changed over from the dryer? You know, is it folded? Did anybody feed the cat? When are the dentist appointments? You know, all of those things. And mental load is that intense cognitive effort that's involved in managing your work, managing your relationships, your family, your household, juggling all of those chainsaws, right? It's that whole collection of details that you have running through your brain through the course of the day. And it has to do with your responsibilities as a human, whether they are formalized or not, and all the decisions that need to be made around those responsibilities, right? So it's those constant mental gymnastics, right? We have to be so agile to be able to do all of these things, right? And it's just such it's such a challenge because it is so often invisible, right? That stress that is endured, the managing of the chaos, the juggling, the you know, wrangling, all those moving parts, and that weight is often unnoticed by others in your life.
Absolutely. And how are you seeing this show up in people? I guess, is it driving them to burnout, and what does that look like?
Yeah, I'm seeing this in all sorts of populations, but the bulk of the people that I work with are women and those who identify as women. And so I'm seeing it there, right? I'm seeing that in the home, right? That mother who is working full-time, either at home, you know, as so many of us are these days, working from home or outside of the home, and is also planning the dental appointment, the permission slips, packing the lunches, coordinating the laundry, ordering the groceries, all of those things. And those things just aren't even noticed, right? And then outside of the home, in work, it's that mental load of those kind of ad hoc responsibilities, right? So there's certain group members who will take on extra work because it needs to be done. And it becomes a significant load that other team members simply don't even acknowledge or not attuned to. And that one person is carrying that in order to maintain, you know, a certain level of movement and momentum in the group, maybe to avoid conflict, to make sure that projects get completed, but it's going unacknowledged, right? And so that it's leading into that burnout because you're constantly in a state of overwhelm.
And you've mentioned the word acknowledge or notice just a few times in the past few minutes. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, how does that, the extra work you're doing, going unnoticed or not being acknowledged, how is that relating to burnout?
I think it's not so much the acknowledgement of it that is related to burnout as just the taking on of the tasks. But the acknowledgement piece is important in that if it is acknowledged, then it's much easier for someone else to take on some of that burden, right? If it's unacknowledged, if it's unnoticed, then one person continues to carry that. Whereas right. If it is being noticed, then, you know, your work partner, your home partner can say, oh, golly, yeah, I just realized that you did 10 hours extra work on this project this week. How can I help? Mm-hmm. Or let me take this on, right? When it's unacknowledged.
So is it the validation that we're looking for? That, yeah, does it somehow, even though the workload doesn't change, is the acknowledgement or validation something that actually helps maybe give us motivation to keep doing it, that you go, okay, I feel like I'm actually, like, I guess maybe validation is almost like payment, because these are certainly chores that you don't get paid for.
Okay. I don't know that it's necessarily the validation that's going to move us forward in a healthy way, because, again, if we're continuing to carry that load, we are going to go to burnout, right? That fatigue is going to persist. So maybe it does give a little momentum to continue, but at some point, there's a breaking point. So is it the validation that we're seeking? Maybe. Is it the validation that will prevent us from burning out? No. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's that acknowledgement and action that comes with that acknowledgement. right? So being able to articulate the need, hey, I've been doing all of this and I need someone else to pick up some of it.
Yeah.
Or I notice that you've been doing all of this, let me help carry that.
And what is that looking like? What is it showing up in your practice? Obviously not giving away any sort of confidentiality, sure. But just in a general format, like how is burnout and when people are coming to the breaking point, what does that look like that they're actually needing help to sort through this?
Constantly thinking about the responsibilities, constantly thinking about the tasks. It's a never ending to-do list around your career, your relationships, your household. It's leading to emotional exhaustion, right? So that leads to a lack of motivation, sleep disruptions, anxious feelings, physical exhaustion, disordered eating. And then we start shifting into that burnout space, right? Where now we're no longer relaxing. We're no longer taking care of ourselves. We're not taking a moment to take care of ourselves because when we do pause, we're worrying about all the things that need to be taken care of as soon as that moment of rest is complete, right? Mm. It's severe emotional, physical, mental exhaustion.
Mm. Yeah, I can't even imagine. I mean, I've been there myself. Mm. I know so many women who have, when you get to that point where you're just like, enough. And I admire people like, you know, single mothers who I just don't even know how, you know, you just manage it all and not having an extra, you know, a partner, an extra set of hands. I mean, it's a lot. And then of course, coming out of the pandemic, you know, how has that exacerbated everything? I mean, we're released. It feels released from our little prison, you know, for, you know, since earlier in this year. But there is certainly a fallout. And how do you help people get back on track? Like, how do you help people that come to you and are at that breaking point? Where do you begin? I mean, they can't quit their job usually. Maybe they can delegate some tasks, but how do they get away or out from underneath that heaviness?
So a good place to start. In? Yeah. So a really good place to start is we talk a lot about boundaries. You know, what are those boundaries? Mm. And that is such a big conversation, right? But it's this notion that there are places that I need to say no, right? As a human, I need to say no, and I need to honor that no and respect that it's a full sentence. And I often say, if you never say no, your yes means nothing.
Yeah.
Right? It has no value.
No is a tough one in particular for a lot of women. I can think about that personally. Saying no feels like you're disappointing someone.
They are banging on.
Not so much now, but like, you know, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Or you're not going to like me.
Exactly.
Why is it that we don't want to say no? Why are we so accustomed to just saying yes, smiling through it and saying yes, and then just this heaviness? We're like putting on another cloak.
Right. And we are culturally engendered, right? Mm. We are culturally conditioned to be nice, right? Nice girls don't. Nice girls, you know, nice girls are pleasant. Nice girls get along. Nice girls don't rock the boat. But yeah, we do actually. Right?
We actually
We actually do, as a matter of fact. And, you know, I think it's so important to distinguish between being nice and being kind, right? Because kindness isn't always nice. Sometimes kindness is very difficult and very challenging and hard. So that part of that is that we are really culturally conditioned to take on that load because we don't want to disappoint people. We're so afraid of being disliked, right? Of being seen as being, you know, they're difficult to work with, when in fact, we're just setting a really healthy boundary of, hey, you know what? My family is expecting me at home. My day ended at 4:30. It's now 5:30. This is not okay. I need to leave. Right. And we get into this place of, well, I took on that extra duty once and I didn't say anything about it. And I did it twice and I didn't say anything about it. And now all this extra work that I've been doing has been making things run more smoothly. And nobody really notices that I've done those extra things, but the minute I stop, they notice.
They notice.
And somehow everybody's then unhappy with me. So we get into this horrible cycle of, well, I have to keep doing this thing to keep things running smoothly because if I don't, the wheels are going to fall off. Well, guess what? Sometimes the wheels fall off, right? Sometimes they do, and it's okay,
yeah.
Right? We get stuck in this this place of expecting balance to be a real thing. I'm going to upset the apple cart here by saying I don't think balance is possible. No, I think it's a myth. And I suggest instead that we strive for harmony rather than balance. And if I think about an orchestra, sometimes, you know, it's the strings that are leading. And sometimes it's the percussion, and sometimes it's the brass or the woodwind. It's not always in perfect balance, but it's always in perfect harmony.
That's a good, I like that, trade balance for harmony. Yeah. Because I think we use that word all the time. And I always say, if you think about something that's in perfect balance, it's stagnant, it's not moving. And the truth is that everything's constantly in motion. So how then do we lead our lives when everything's in motion? You know, so that is the tricky part is I feel like it's about priorities. What do you feel it's about?
Like, absolutely. That's exactly it. It's what needs to lead right now. You know, if my kid is sick.
That's a good question. What needs to lead right now?
Right now. Yeah, if my kid is sick at home, that's what needs to lead right now. Right. That's the thing. That's priority. If, you know, I have a client in crisis, then that's what needs to lead right now. And we have to make those choices on a daily basis. And we have to remember that it absolutely is a choice.
And let's use this as a really great example, because as we were setting up this podcast, so I admire you for this. We had a podcast recorded, I think, last week.
Right.
And then you couldn't make it because there was a crisis with your client. And you said to me, I'm sorry, I had to reschedule. I'm like, that's fine. And you said family, clients, and then everything else. And I could see your priorities because it means if one of those two things, I mean, a podcast recording, we can do whatever. I am not a priority. But that was a perfect example of you drawing a clear boundary and saying, I'm sorry, I have a client that needs help. And I didn't take any offense to that, but I thought that that's a perfect example of someone who knows what they want and they ask for it. And I think that's another thing that often people have a hard time is asking for what they want.
Absolutely. We're so afraid of hurting others somehow with setting a clear boundary. And I think that's because we make the mistake of believing that boundaries are punitive when in fact they're protective.
Oh, good point.
Right? Like I have a pasture full of horses out here outside my office, and the fence, the electric fence, is not to punish them. It's to protect them from predators. It's to protect them from harm. And what the great thing is that there's a gate on that fence. And I get to decide when that gate is opened or closed. And if we look at our boundaries in that way as being protective, and we get to decide when the gate is opened or closed and who gets to come in or not, then we realize that it truly isn't a punitive action. It's protecting our emotional space, our emotional energy, our family, our finances. It is protective.
Yeah, that's so great. And I don't know why we think, you use the word afraid and I use the word afraid too. You know, we're so afraid of hurting others. And why is that? I almost feel like, really, we're disempowering other people to learn and to grow.
Absolutely.
Like, you know what I mean? But we don't see it as that. We take it on as if I don't do it, the whole world's going to fall apart. And the truth is, it won't. The world will go on just fine. But if we make it feel like the whole world is on our shoulders, and that is not the truth.
And it isn't,
but it feels like that. So actually being able to identify your priorities and actually place them, where they put them at the top, is so important. But I think maybe that's what we lack, and we don't really know what our priorities are.
That's often where we start in our work here is what are the priorities? What needs to lead? As I said earlier, what's the most important thing in this moment? And so often in the women that I work with, it's, well, my family's first. Well, how does your family get to be first? Who takes care of your family? Well, I do. Well, how on earth are you going to take care of them if you're in bed with a complete and utter burnout? You can't take care of them. You're no darn good to them, right? It's not selfish to take care of yourself. You know, it is in fact an act of service.
And it's like the oxygen mask theory that they talk about, when you're on the plane. And it's true, you got to put your own mask on if you're going to help anybody else. But we have such a hard time remembering that. It's just amazing. Give, give, give.
And, you know, I work with a lot of medical professionals, and I'll say, you know what? What's the thing that's drilled into your brains in an emergency? Personal protective equipment first. You put on your gloves, you put on your mask, and they know this. They know this, you know, so it's so ingrained that they know immediately, oh, I put on my gloves and my mask. Well, you do that in a crisis. Why aren't you doing that on the daily to make sure you can continue to be there in that crisis? Taking care of yourself, your nutrition, your hydration, your rest, your recreation, those are all personal protective equipment.
Mm. Great point. And yet we don't do it.
And yet we don't
or,
do it.
Or not well.
Well, and that's it.
That's the thing we can let slide until it's beyond to a point where now we have to get in bed and rest for, mm-hmm. 3 weeks.
And honestly, it's a discipline, right? Taking care of ourselves
Absolutely.
Is a discipline. It's not something that just kind of happens naturally because we have been really conditioned to not take care of ourselves. So we have to actually take this on as a discipline, making a choice intentionally every day. And we get stuck in this idea that it has to be big, and it doesn't. It can be micro actions, right? Those little tiny moments. I talk about those pockets of joy, right? When we celebrate mm-hmm. those pockets of joy, we're engaging in those micro actions of care. So for me, it could be that first cup of hot coffee in the morning. And people are like, well, I love hot coffee. That's great. That's nice. And it's how I enjoy it. It's the intention behind choosing my mug, choosing what beans I'm going to grind, listening to the kettle boiling, the sound the French press makes as you push it down. So there's mindful activity in that becomes part mm-hmm. of that self-care process, but I have to choose to do it. I could easily throw a pod into a Keurig.
Right.
And instead,
and also seeing that as a mindful activity, as seen as a self-care. I think we discount all those little things we do every day, those little moments where we could maybe catch our breath. Mm-hmm. Or, for example, one of the things that I will practice is to try not to spend as much time on my phone because it just distracts you. It gives me a headache, really, when you're scrolling. You're caught in a loop and you don't even realize. You're like, my God, I'm scrolling and I can't take my finger off
stop.
The phone. I can't stop and I don't know why, but they're designed to do that. Mm-hmm. But if, for example, I'm in a, waiting for a friend in a coffee shop or in a dentist's office, not to use my phone to read, bring a book with me, or just to sit and just breathe, and just those little moments actually do help you catch your breath. But we get locked in these bad habits. And unfortunately, our phone is one of them. But
it absolutely is. And while these are wonderful tools that we can use our phones, our tablets, our smartwatches, we can use all of those as tools to support our self-care. We've unfortunately become reliant on them for that dopamine bump.
Oh, there it is right there. We're getting a little hit of something. Mm-hmm. It's distraction. It's procrastination. It's a
right?
whole bunch of things.
Yeah. Every time you get that light.
To it. Yeah. You're like, who liked it?
Right?
Right. Yeah. And why do we care?
And why do we care? And I think part of that really, Dana, is that we are social creatures, right? Humans we're built for connection. We're built for community. And we have, and especially over the last 3 years, our community has shifted in how we engage because of the pandemic. And so we've really become comfortable with artificial community. And definitely there are kinds of community that can happen using social media, using, FaceTime and Zoom and so on and so forth. It's definitely possible and it does build connection. But we forget sometimes the value of real life, in-person, tangible, physical experiences.
Yes.
That kind of community, right? The sitting down in real life, face to face, over that hot cup of coffee, talking about a book, talking about a concert, talking about the weather for Pete's sake, right? Just being
with
humans.
Yeah. I don't know if you read the book, The Blue Zones with Dan Butner, who has looked at the 5 blue zones around the world where people live mm-hmm. Like to 100 or quite a few people do.
It's
and that's
right.
That's one of those key components is connection. And often these were people who connected with people daily, like sitting on a front porch, just having a coffee, talking mm-hmm. with your friends. Or going to a coffee shop and doing that. And I think we're missing a real key piece of connection. And if anything the pandemic has taught me is, I knew that I liked connection before, but you really miss, when I see people now, I'm like, oh my God, I'm still excited. It's people, real people.
Right, real life people. And can I get a hug, please?
Can I get a hug? And we're not so afraid anymore to do that. But there is nothing to replace that connection because there's an energy that happens when people come together,
There absolutely is. If you look at any rural community, the longest living residents are the old guys that sit at the general store.
Exactly.
On the front porch, you know, shooting the breeze with anybody that comes by. They're building connection and community every single day. You know, very, very naturally, right? It's very organic, and they're the longest living, right? Everybody knows that old guy with his pocket knife and take some advice from that guy. He's been around.
Yeah, right? It's so true. That's so true. So we've talked about, you talked about boundaries, you talked about trading balance for harmony, we talked about good self-care. Is there anything else that we need to think of when we're trying to bounce back for burnout or prevent us from getting there?
It is not a fast track, right? It requires baby steps. It requires intention. And true burnout requires not just, you know, a week in the sun. Okay. That's a vacation. And that's where you're starting to get tired. You're starting to get a little fatigued. Actual burnout can be absolutely physically debilitating. It can take weeks, months, and in some cases, unfortunately, even years to recover from. And so it really requires a holistic approach with, you know, your physician, your nurse practitioner, your naturopath, you know, whatever practitioners you work with, your mental health professionals, you know, dietitians. It is a whole person approach. And we can't take care of our emotional needs, our mental needs, without taking care of also our physical needs. We can't attend to our spiritual needs without attending to our emotional needs. These are intertwined. Right. And we get this idea that, well, if I just have a week's vacation, I'll be fine. But what do we do on a week's vacation if we're not traveling? We're taking care of the clutter in the house. We're mindlessly scrolling social media. We need to be intentional in recovery from burnout, just the same as we would be intentional in recovery from a motor vehicle accident. We would give ourselves the grace to recover from broken bones. And we need to give ourselves that same level of grace and patience in recovery from burnout.
Would you say that, because burnout can be a serious thing, like you say, it's not just something you just bounce back from. Would a majority of people be really just suffering from overwhelm and exhaustion? I mean, obviously that can lead to burnout. We might use the word casually, oh, I'm burned out, but that may mean something completely different. But is it just an onslaught of people who are feeling tired from, you know, people are doing more with less at work? You know, I've seen it. And would you say that's what people are struggling with?
I certainly think that there's an increase in the number of people I'm seeing who are experiencing true burnout. Definitely an increase in that, particularly in mental health and medical professionals. I'm seeing a higher incidence of burnout, especially over the last 3 years. What I see a lot of is exactly what you said. It's that overwhelm, right? And so when we talk about caring professionals, we talk about compassion fatigue. So we could talk about it as caregiver fatigue. It is that sense of I've been doing, just as you said, so much with diminishing resources and with, you know, much less capacity for caring for self, because there's so many competing interests that my personal interests get put on the back burner. So there is that sense that, yeah, it's just a lot of complete and utter overwhelm. I'm juggling chainsaws. But the good news is you can decide whether they're turned on or not, right? Because you're in charge.
Yeah. What would be that first step? I know you're talking about boundaries, but if people say, I'm just really going to sit down and I want to figure out what my priorities are. Do you have little steps, or is that the question? I like the question you said earlier, you know, what do I need? What's leading right now? Or what is it? What's getting my attention right now?
Yeah. If I look at that in terms of my life, is it my personal relationship? Is it my intimate partner relationship? Yeah. Is it my career? Is it my finances? Is it my physical health? What is it that's leading right now? What's number one? And only set three, right? We're so good at making endless lists of 87 things and then getting exhausted and beating ourselves up for not finishing the list. Like, give it a rest. I was gifted the most beautiful post-it notes. And it's today's top three. And they're just the size of a regular post-it. So you can't put more on it, right? And every day I can put three things. Right.
And I think three things is so important. There's a book, a great business book called From Good to Great by Jim Collins. And he talks about setting three priorities. And he says, if you have more than three priorities, you probably have none, because you can't get to it all.
That's right.
And,
you can't.
And I just had a conversation with someone the other day, and he goes, I have a to-do list, and then it just grows bigger the next day, and I put more stuff on it. And priorities is different than a to-do list, is it not?
Absolutely. A to-do list, you know, my to-do list is enormous, right? I live on a farm. I have kids, you know. We have like 40 animals here. My to-do list is never end. My priority list is very different. When I set my boundary, I don't get to decide how the other person responds to my boundary.
Right.
I get to decide how I set it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? With the full knowledge and acknowledgement that the other person is an autonomous human, can make their own decisions and can say their own no. And we're devaluing other humans and invalidating their worth when we expect that they're not going to be okay with our boundary. They might not be okay with our boundary, but that's their choice, not ours.
Yeah. And that's the one I think that trips us up when we want to set boundaries or define our priorities and live in accordance with them. And because for me, even what would turn me off is if I said no to somebody and I had to muster up tremendous courage to say no, I hated the look on their face of disappointment.
Right.
And now I recognize, I'm like, you have to own that. This, you know, it still isn't always comfortable if people feel like, you know, they act out because they don't get what they want. But that's also to me a little bit of a control thing. But but I am not responsible for you.
Yeah, absolutely not.
But so it's a lot of emotional growth, a lot of personal growth to build yourself up to that, to stand in who you are and be that favorite self.
My
favorite self is someone who is standing in her power. I mean, that's a much more powerful place. I mean, I just love that. You know, who's your favorite self? That's a great question to take away from our talk today.
Oh, I'm so glad, because it really is so important. And to know who your favorite self is, who is your favorite self that you would introduce childhood you, right? Mm. Your favorite self is that person that you want 5-year-old you to know, that you want 13-year-old you to admire, that you want 18-year-old you to aspire to be. That's your favorite self, mm-hmm. right? And you can remember that, you know, you may not be everybody's cup of tea, but you can be lot of folks' cup of coffee.
Mm. Yeah. What role does compassion play in this conversation that we've been having?
The foundations of my practice are community, connection, and compassion.
Mm.
When we have community, we have that connection, but we can have neither of those without compassion. And that compassion has to start first with self.
Oh, can you say more about that, how that leads into community and connection?
If I have compassion for self, then I'm better positioned to have compassion for others.
Mm.
If I see myself with value, if I see myself with worth, then I am standing in my power. I'm not striving to get attention. I'm not striving for validation. Then I can be that person who's able to lift others up with comfort. Right? Without fear, without jealousy, without envy, if I'm engaged in self-compassion, I'm better positioned to be compassionate to others. When I'm compassionate to others, I can be connected, right? When I feel compassion for self and others, I can join in. I can be part of something. I can invite others to be part of my thing. And then that's where we build that community, right? Those three pieces, those pillars, they work together to create this beautiful sense of I can be me, and that's okay. You can be you, and that's okay. And we can be here together, and that's beautiful.
Hmm. And I think that the word belonging comes up for me. We all want to belong. You know,
yes, we do.
When you say I can be a part of something, then when I have compassion for myself, and then I can have it for others. You can be a part of a community, and you know, who doesn't want to belong?
It's such a powerful thing, right? And fitting in is so different than belonging. Fitting in is easy. Yes. Belonging is deeper. It's more emotionally connected. It's more spiritually connected. It's more visceral, right? Belonging is much more visceral than fitting in.
Mm, so true. Yeah. I loved everything that we've chatted about. Is there anything that we've chatted about that you want to say more about that I haven't asked you about? I'm sure I'll listen back to this. I'm like, why didn't I ask her about
that? Why didn't you talk about that? We can talk again sometime for sure. You
know, for sure.
I'm just grateful to have this conversation, because I think it's so important that we are having these dialogues about taking care of self in order to take care of others, of being connected, because we have been so disconnected, right? We have...
Yeah.
you know, we live in these weird silos and we need community. And these conversations help build that, right? They really bring us together in a way that is really lovely. Hmm. And when we have community, we can have healing.
Hmm. That's a good one. When we have community, we can have healing. Isn't that the truth? Mm-hmm. Isn't that the truth? Well, I loved having this dialogue with you. I always love doing deep dives on conversations like this. You have the Coverdale Counseling Center. You personally aren't taking clients right now, but you have other people who are.
That's right.
But you also do talks. If people are interested in things that you're saying today, you have talks that self-care is more than a clever hashtag. Love the skin you're in, too much and not enough, and a whole bunch of other ones. So I encourage people to go to your website to check you out. What is your website for people to go directly to you?
It's just the W's, www.coverdalecounseling.com. .ca. And of course, counseling has two L's because I am in Canada.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I really enjoyed having this conversation today. One last question. How does the work that you do fulfill you or fulfill your soul or life's purpose?
Oh boy. I wish I didn't have my job because that would mean that people weren't hurting. But I love my work. I absolutely love my work because I know every single day when I go to work that I can sit there and hold space for someone who is struggling, whether, you know, deeply emotionally with their mental health, just trying to process through something, through deep grief, trauma, through a crisis, that I can be there and hold that for someone. Service is the highest calling, and I get to do that every single day. I get to serve. And that really fills my bucket.
I can tell. You're very passionate about these topics and have so much wisdom and insight to share. And I'm glad that we were able to join in conversation and share some of those nuggets with the audience today. So I really appreciate your time, Carrie.
This was a
delightful conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you're welcome.
That was such a great conversation. If you loved it too, subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. Please go to iTunes to rate and review this podcast. And if you want to continue the conversation, connect with Soul Sister Conversations on the Facebook and Instagram pages. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook at Dana Lloyd Leadership, on Twitter at Coach Dana_Lloyd, and of course on LinkedIn. See you next week.